This is Red Ice Radio, a beacon of sanity from Northern Europe. RedIceCreations.com.
Howdy folks, greetings and a big warm welcome in this cold climate of 2012 to all kind people out there who are tuning in today, who appreciate the efforts of the guests and researchers that come on programs like this to share, in some cases, years of their research and hard work with us so that we can broaden our horizons and learn more, hopefully, about life and reality, science and spirituality, conspiracy and geopolitics, and many of the other subjects that we cover on Red Ice Radio. This is for those who have ears to hear, eyes to see, a heart to feel, and a soul to appreciate the few commonalities and objectives that exists across the board of those who are at least trying to do something about the problems that they see in the world. And you can find more at RedIceCreations.com. Today's guest, Dr. Nick Begich, has been pursuing independent research in the sciences and politics for most of his adult life. Begich received Doctor of Medicine, an honorary degree for independent work in health and political science. He has published articles and is a well-known lecturer, and he co-authored with Gene Manning the book Angels Don't Play This Harp, Advances in Tesla Technology. Begich has also authored Earth Rising, The Revolution, and Earth Rising 2, The Betrayal of Science, Society and the Soul, both with the late James Roderick. His latest work is Controlling the Human Mind, The Technologies of Political Control, or Tools for Peak Performance. Stay with us as we discuss the developments in mind control technologies and speculate what the DoD and DARPA might have in their arsenal today. We talk about the worldwide mind-brainwave synchronization and the more subtle to the most obvious ways your brain might be influenced on a daily basis. Right, welcome to Red Ice Radio, Nick Begich. It's good to talk to you once again. It was quite a few years ago since we last talked, but we're excited to have you back again. So thank you for taking the time and thank you for coming back on the program.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me on again. It's always good to be talking to audiences here. So thank you very much. I appreciate being with you.
You bet. You have so much information. Of course, you're extremely knowledgeable about HARP. I think that's probably the topic that one foremost associate your name with, I think, these days. And that's definitely something we can talk and should discuss a little bit later as well. But you've also done extensive research on controlling the human mind, other areas of manipulation of perception and such. You're the author of the book called Controlling the Human Mind, The Technologies of Political Control or Tools for Peak Performance. And I guess where I'd like to begin is to talk a little bit about some of the new areas of work that's being done currently, because we always should and talk about the history, of course. We hear about the developments of these technologies that are designed to alter and manipulate human consciousness and perception. And you know, we hear, this goes back a few decades, we hear about people like Jose Delgado, Dr. Alan Frey, you know, I mean, much of this was done in the 70s, 80s. And I guess I'd like to begin to see where we are today. I mean, to preface this just a little bit here, we know that DARPA and the DOD are taking a lot of money to do extensive research in these areas. And so where should we begin, Nick? I mean, in your estimation, what is possible these days and what have been provable or demonstrated? And then later we can talk about what might be happening behind the scenes when it comes to black ops development, because it seems sometimes, Nick, that mind control and manipulation of the human brain is offered as a solution to a lot of the mysteries of this world when it comes to people, from the Manchurian candidates of shooting, school shootings and things like this, like what happened in Colorado in Aurora. And so I'd like to just get into a little bit how specific you think that the technology of mind control is today.
Well, you know, this really is a question of resolution, you know, and as we get our more advanced technologies and better modeling and better equipment, better technologies all the way around, we're able to deduce and understand a little bit more and develop technologies that certainly have gone a real long distance. The best is kind of revealed by DARPA and military organizations' request for proposals. You know, what are they looking for? It's really an interesting way that we've approached it. And One of the things that came out of just a couple of years ago was this idea of electronic telepathy, and not just from the standpoint of sort of knowing what people are thinking at a distance, but on a real high resolution, not just knowing what their emotional states might be, which are things you can determine at a distance by looking at not just brain activity, but heart rate, breathing, a lot of things that the technology already exists today. And when what they're looking for is like taking a look at brain patterns as a person has a specific thought over a group and seeing if there's some continuity between them, and then creating complex signal drivers that can sort of recreate those same brain states and see if you can actually, you know, sort of create the dictionary, if you will, of thought transference. And so that, I mean, when you think about technology today, you know, going to that high of a resolution, they're thinking about using it for confusing adversaries. Obviously, we can see the nature of that, and then at the same time using it for communication with our own troops in the battlefield. And, you know, something to point out is that usually as military intelligence agencies have an interest in this area for, you know, a variety of reasons, and that's why this history goes back, you know, so far to the 60s, even back to the 50s, quite frankly, and we can trace some of it even back to Harvard hypnotherapy labs in the 1920s.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting area. I mean, they're trying to map the human brain as much as they can to be able to, well, decode it, I guess, see how the electrical signals flow and the neural networks and everything else. And they're working on things like the Blue Brain Project to try to map a complete human brain. How far along do you think we are when it comes to these things? I mean, is the brain still a mystery to a large extent, or are we kind of solving some of these problems or issues right now?
I think as far as a lot of it goes, we are figuring it out. We are solving it. In fact, on the whole electronic telepathy thing, you know, if you think about it as the brain just sort of functioning as an energy receiver and transferring, you know, energy in all different forms and sound, sight, touch, taste, maybe even, you know, there's more direct transfers that occur as well. And I think that's where the resolution comes into the picture. You know, how much is tissue and how much is the way the signals are actually transferred, and looking at the signal as opposed to sort of the mechanism behind the biological part of the body, maybe a lot can be revealed. And that's where a lot of this research is looking. You know, they're looking at what, maybe it's just as simple as that, you know, manipulating signals like you manipulate signals to transfer over the radio or over television or any other energy transfer network where information is being moved across something. So looking at sort of the circuitry is what they're looking at, and that I think we're at a pretty high state in terms of what we're learning and what we're finding out. And within all of that, if it were generally, you know, sort of indexed and available, there are a lot of interesting things you might be able to do with that in terms of medical health, physical health.
Mm-hmm.
But if you think about it from the brain standpoint, thoughts, ideas, concepts, you know, this gets something that certainly we want to know about, certainly we want to see regulated at some point along the way.
Well, what are some of the elements of fear here, or worry, I guess is a better word. What could be done if this is, well, shall we say, if this is all there is, meaning circuitry? We're still, some sciences go further and they speculate that there is more than just the electrical flow, and there's more, well, we could define it as a soul or a spirit even. But
yeah, absolutely, that's there. And certainly that's the underlying root of all of it when you stop and think about it. And I think man sort of tries to duplicate what is already in existence, you know, whether it's figuring out how sonar works by looking at marine animals. I mean, if it's you know, looking at radar and how we develop some of that concept, and what we're really looking at again is things that exist in nature. The human soul is sort of the overriding consciousness. There's a lot of physicists looking at this whole idea, but at the same time interfering with a system, something that's becoming higher and higher possibilities just in terms of emotional states. A simple thing. You can not just read them, but you can also create them. And they're simple drivers. Frequency following a response is really the mechanism by which it happens. And you can use oscillating light or oscillating sound signals that are organized a certain way, or pulse-modulated electromagnetic signals, and change the emotional state of anyone you want to target. On a gross level, you know, on a real low energy level even, you can manipulate a large segment of the population. Sort of what doesn't I mean, they say 70%, I think, is the numbers that everyone kind of throws around when you read literature on it. And maybe the other 30% you account for by stronger individual fields or near fields that would cancel, you know, those incoming signals. Certainly you wouldn't create that entrainment or frequency following response. It's where the brain locks onto the external signals and it begins to actually change the pulse rate or rhythm of that signal, whether it be light, sound, or electromagnetic fields of a more electrical nature, magnetic nature.
How accurate do you think this is as we, if we begin to move into the areas of manipulating and changing people's, well, both perception but also general mood and the brain waves that, that we hold? How specific do you think that they could become or we could utilize this? I mean, are we talking about a scenario where you completely could program a human being and tell them where to go, exactly what clothes to wear, and the actions following
well,
that?
Well, there's some a guy named Estabrooks actually developed some ideas along this line, and he did work from the 1920s into the 1960s. And the idea in his mind, what we would call a Manchurian candidate, somebody that you could like program to go in and do something like a spy or some sinister work, you know, could you do it? And what he found is that actually you could create a dual personality in about 20% of the population based on his own work and hypnotherapy. And he felt that over 9 or 10 months you could actually accomplish that. And he prepared a lot of ideas along this line and actually published some of his findings and was reported in interviews to have actually said that he had done this, you know, on a number of occasions, created this kind of situation. A lot of his work became classified as far back as the 1940s, and the idea of creating someone you could manipulate and control. But in a simple way, I mean, here's a real simple example of how the technology can be used, and I'd say is being used today, is if you look at television commercials and you think about the brain state of people when they enter you know, the news, you know, they come home from a hard day at work, everyone's fatigued, they want to relax, they sit in front of a television set, to the extent in which they actually fall into a light trance-like state anyway. I mean, think about the spouse or a roommate hollering at the guy watching the television, and they don't even hear him. You know, they're actually in an altered state on some level. At the same time, you can sort of enhance that by just the flicker rate that you hold on, say, a television commercial. And if you look in a dark room or a darkly lit room, behind you, not at the television screen, but behind you at the way the flash of the screen affects, let's say, a white wall in terms of its flicker rate. Well, if you manipulate the flicker rate, you can actually drop that trance-like state into what's called a theta state, where your highly suggestion works very well and effectively, and then just run the advertisement. You can do this, that entrainment effect, within 20 to 30 seconds, and plug a commercial or political message in, or the 6 o'clock news for that matter, and the way it lays down for most people is pretty significant if they fall into that state readily, if they're not more focused, more aware, more awake. It's the outcome. It's unavoidable.
But what is it, how is it with newer televisions, by the way? Because I've heard this for a long time as well, and these days we get, you know, the LCD screens and everything, and there's a higher frequency rate in those. So what's the difference with those, do you know?
Well, I think a couple things. You know, if you think about the flicker rate of those screens, because they are digital, you could vary it, I suppose, across that entire surface in a lot different ways than you could with a standard broadcast screen. You got a lot more, perhaps, capacity, you know, to alter a signal, manipulate a signal, or you might say at a higher resolution, by being able to segment a screen and do all kinds of things, and above the rate where you'd normally perceive it, you know, visually perceive it at least. You know, that can happen. And actually, way beyond what people suggest, I mean, the eye distinguishes up to about 1,500 flickers, not below 60, which is, you know, another issue of, you know, when you want to talk about just something we know, the stress of fluorescent lights. It's at 60 hertz here, 50 hertz there. In Europe, you know, this causes a stress, an underlying stress, that leads to eye fatigue and fatigue throughout the day.
Well, I can't stand fluorescent lights, by the way. As soon as I come into them, I get tired and just want to run out of there wherever I am.
Right. And you think about the, and then the changes, you know, with LEDs, which are more leaning to the blue spectrum, which is your your daylight cycle, you know, when you think about the blue sky and how your how that affects your sleep cycles, when you're subjected to that on all of your evening lighting as well, versus yellow light, which has more of the full spectrum, so it leads to this, you know, sunset, go to sleep sense. We really alter, even on a fundamental level, our general energy state. So when you think about energy and its interaction with the human body, that's probably, you know, the broader issue, mind control, this issue of manipulating the brain using electromagnetic fields is, from my perspective at least, you know, the most challenging in terms of maintaining any sense of ethics or integrity. And what the Russians had come out with in their military journals on this issue in the late 1990s got into the idea that you could modulate a signal on any carrier. Television, radio, the internet, even electrical grids could be pulse modulated in a way that you could affect behavior of people over, you know, pretty large areas. And this was also published in the U.S. Army quarterly perimeters here in the U.S. It was either in the winter of 98 or the winter of 99, the article on this, called "The Mind Has No Firewalls." And it's an interesting article because it gets into sort of what are the modern ways that we can do this across the spectrum. And it goes, you know, beyond chemicals or the kind of technologies that were used, you know, during the 60s, primarily in the 50s under the MK Ultra and their related 140 plus programs.
That's right. That's an excellent article, and it really goes into some detail. And again, a lot of this is material from you know, back a few decades now. So let's just speculate a little bit here and talk about where possibly DARPA and other you know, organizations might be today when it comes to mind control. How far advanced do you think that they've gotten since the days of Delgado and onwards? We hear about, of course, the fighter pilot, the you know, their helmets that they use. They have magnetic field to enhance the brain's activity and to become even more coherent of sorts and observant, I guess. And that's, I guess, would be more of a benevolent, you know, attitude towards the technology, but there might be a more sinister one as well. But where do you think, if you're to speculate a little bit, Nick, where are they today and what is possible, do you think?
Well, I think the idea of changing emotional states, for instance, we're definitely there. I mean, that's no doubt about it. Any of these systems can be used either purposefully or as an accidental side effect, for that matter, for those that are ignorant of the process. You know, so I think the acceptance of this has changed a bit. You know, the idea there's other technologies that have been used for preventing shoplifting. And if, as an example, in Japan, there was a system set up for broadcast, you know, the elevator kind of music, that various kinds of music in the background, but under it were, in seven languages, the anti-shoplifting methods, messages rather, and they brought out a 40% statistical change in losses. You know, that's pretty significant. You know, the temptation or the interest in using that becomes, you know, driven by the market, and the lack of regulation or restriction in most countries allows it. Now let's imagine it wasn't the message to shoplifters, and probably the reason that 60% of it doesn't work is some shoplifters already know the risks and they don't care. That's why they're doing it. And those are the professionals, one that account for probably the greater amount of losses anyway. They've already made the judgment, no messaging is going to change it in terms of those kinds of messages. But when you look at it across, you know, what about selling something that's not moving? You know, is that fair? Is it a good idea to put those messages into the broadcast? Hey, take advantage of the sale on Island 6 and get something you absolutely don't need or want. And a larger, statistically, a greater percentage of people will buy that. Now, is that undue influence? Are these things that we ought to be talking about? I mean, that's the technology that is here today, and yet we don't see it addressed in regulation virtually anywhere in the broader sense.
Why do you think that is? Are they consciously keeping this away because it works on some level here, so they need to keep it?
Well,
keep it
it does work. And in fact, most institutions that teach psychology today around the world also understand frequency following response, this idea of the brain in training to these external signals. And So when you apply that in industry, which when there's no regulation not to, of course you do. You ads work. You want them to work more effectively. These are the kinds of things that, you know, kind of work their way in. Now, when you get a higher resolution, think about how much the World Wide Web we have today. Think about what that essentially represents, sort of the worldwide brain. PBS here did a special on this, and what they talked about is coming in the next generation of this technology, the worldwide mind, where you don't need the intermediary because you figured out enough at a high enough resolution to read and transfer information directly from human minds. Now, that's interesting in terms of where people see it. Where do I see it at the moment is we're getting higher and higher resolution, greater understandings of this. There was one researcher in an unpublished work, it's a physicist that's published 190 papers. They did a paper on using specific signals for transferring what we would call electromagnetic telepathy, using a receiver in a person in one room and a transmitter in another room and hooking two people up with no experience and, you know, telepathy or consciously anyway. And they transferred on a number of test subjects 100% reliability using the cards they use in psychic testing with the squares and the triangles and the squiggly lines and so on. And they had 100% efficiency on this transfer. So it wasn't a question of some special skill. It was a matter of figuring out how to transfer that signal effectively from one brain to another so that you could do this. And that was 1985 when that experiment was run and the apparatus was set up. And it created a lot of discomfort for the individual who did it, who's a very good friend of mine, someone I've known for a good number of years. And looking at that paper, I can see why. This would be not just for intelligence gathering, but just think of all of its implications. Now, today, I mentioned DARPA has contracts. Those have been out and let to the University of California for figuring out this electronic telepathy. One set to sort of look at a bunch of brains and see what's going on, and the other set to look at transfer systems for creating complex signals, may have transfer specific thoughts. So I think we're pretty much there. I think it's just a matter of a few short years till we start to see more discussion of, but security agency issues are really what it's about. Any good technology that gives us a distinct advantage presents the challenge of, you know, when is it in the public interest and when is it not. And when you talk about the idea of the mind, why I think this is such an important issue, controlling human behavior, interfering with free will on any level is something that most religious faiths say even God doesn't do. But here we have technologies that can override our normal natural systems, and isn't that exactly what these systems do?
I mean, if we look ahead a little bit, it's really amazing when you think about it, the possibilities that we might be looking at in a few years of what might be possible and what might not be possible. Also, as you said before, think about the firewall idea. If we zoom forward a few years, if one can read other people's brain waves with another kind of with a device, let's say. I mean, there are these Japanese toys that apparently pick up on the brain waves of the, you know, the one who's playing with the toy and responds accordingly to that.
Right.
What if you, for example, can read somebody's mind and get their PIN code or whatever for their, you know, their password or something like that? It takes us into the area there must be some kind of protection against this, like a firewall that you said before, and I bet you there's probably research being done on this, on how to protect yourself or how to shield yourself from this. What do you think are some of the possible answers for this, or are there any answers to this?
Well, that's probably true. I mean, it's you know, we have a lot of things that can probably block out, you know, modulating fields of a stronger nature. There's a lot of ways to kind of look at it, I suppose, and I think countermeasures are always part of the program, you know, because whatever we can develop, someone else can too. And I think that's one of the things about technology today. It's flatter and flatter all the time, but it opens up a whole lot of challenges in terms of what, you know, what should be allowed, what shouldn't be allowed, what violates the very nature of who we are as human beings. And it's a discussion I have more and more frequently, because I think that is the essence of where we're headed in our technology across the board. I mean, we can either destroy ourselves in so many ways, or do the opposite. And it's really about how we deploy the technology. So much of technology, when you think about spending and funding, goes to military establishments and security agencies.
Yeah.
And the sad part of that is when you start to figure out these things that actually affect the human mind, the human body in these profound ways, you can apply that to healing technologies. Some have begun to do that, and I think that's part of the sort of the bright side of some of this is the more we learn about how the mind and body works, how it deals with signals, what signals it generates when it's ill, the more possibilities emerge in that whole field of health. In fact, I think the methods that are being developed in this area, and we've been saying it now for 17 years, and over that 17 years, we've seen a lot of progress in these ideas of applying electromagnetic fields to tissue regeneration, bone regeneration. A lot of other health issues are starting to be addressed more and more frequently in the mainstream with valid, patents that prove the technology.
That's right. In what you brought up earlier with the Worldwide Mind, excellent documentary, by the way, that shows some of this. And I think one of the distinguishing points or parts in all of this is when they begin to move into an interface into the brain, either an implantable microchip or simply some kind of computer brain interface. Once we go into that area, then all of these, which is very scary to me, of course, but more and more would become, I guess, possible at that stage. We can certainly talk about what's doable with from a remote view kind of point of view or remote view. You basically can send frequencies to the brain and then effective. You don't have to have an interface. But if someone has an interface or a computer brain interface, what is possible from that point of view? What could be done there? Because that's scary territory to me anyway, Nick.
Absolutely. And in fact, this is like the ultimate hack. And, a lot of money is being spent on and sort of the undiscussed part of this program. If you read The Mind Has No Firewalls and give it any validity at all, and there's plenty since then. I mean, there's additional work by the electromagnetic director of the Air Force published in 2002 on what they had done so far and what they call controlled effects. But when you look sort of at where it all goes, ultimately, you can do it now. You got China spending billions. You've got every sophisticated government on the planet spending billions to figure out how to deal with info warfare. And when you think about signal blocking signals or transmitting signals, which is what that's all about, these technologies as an overlay to that become pretty tempting. And think about it from the standpoint, we underestimate too, China has an ideology, regardless of how people want to view this situation currently, that they'd like the rest of the world to share with them. And so do we in the West. So this is really the temptation to use technologies to further ideologies, which is what Zbigniew Brzezinski talked about in his book Between Two Ages, published far back as 1973. And what he said was that no matter what your ideology, the temptation to use these technologies to further your political ends becomes enormously tempting. In fact, his suggestion was no matter who had it, when they had it, they would try and use it to further their political ends. And I think, people don't remember him. He started a trilateral commission, went on to be National Security Advisor to Jimmy Carter, and continues to influence policy. And if you read that book in 73, everything in it came true from the in terms of how technology affected every emerging market and the established order of economies as well. And you read it like a prediction, and it actually happened. When you look at what happens now, okay, well, hacking through these systems essentially ultimately leads to the hacking of the human mind, which is what these technologies are about. Whether you're just affecting someone's emotional state or something more with more resolution than that. And the fact that the possibility exists, the thing that comes out too in the literature is that we could put circuits on incoming transmissions that are at the base, at your TV, at your computer, on your phones, probably relatively cheaply, that would disrupt that capability. Because once you know it, you can build, as you say, countermeasures. But nobody's willing to sort of take a look at this on a policy level, at least at this point, because the advantage is just huge. And the worst of things that you can imagine would likely be tried at some point along the way. It just depends on what people's confidence level in these technologies and their use of them is. And how much backdoor, back-channel dialogue on who goes first creates the next problem. I just don't know about that. But I can tell you it's here now to a great extent. And the only thing that's getting better is the resolution under which we can do this.
Yeah. I mean, do you think that these things are being tried as we speak right now? Or are we being mind controlled? Because when I look around, oh, okay, certainly. I mean, there's a lot of things contributing to this, from what people eat to what they think generally, or even if they how much they use their brain. But I mean, geez, looking back, the last 10, 15 years is like the population all over the planet has ended up in some kind of zombie state. I can't help to think and wonder some days that is there some beam going out or something like that, and people are completely decapacitated and unable to use their brain as they once did. What do you think, Nick?
Well, I think there's a lot of things contributing to that, and certainly something intentional. You know, it's pulling. You'd really have to start looking at every signal and starting to draw some conclusions from that. I'm sure people are on some level, but yeah, it does affect everyone. Just in terms of exposure to electromagnetic fields, generally, people don't think much about it. But if you're in a power failure situation, I said this once in Germany and nobody understood it, but here in the U.S. where the power fails every once in a while and actually shuts down, your whole body almost takes just like an exhale. And most people notice the sound because they don't hear machinery running or refrigerators vibrating or anything else. But once you get past that, if you think about it, during a power failure, your whole body sort of contracts, sort of relaxes. Because we're in a constant state of stress related to all of these signals interacting with the human body. And when you think about it, just in radio frequency energy alone, we have 200 million times more than we had at the turn of the last century, you know, over 100
years
ago.
Repeat that again, Nick. How much more do we have?
200 million times more.
Wow.
And that was as of around 2000. And it's just increasing. You know, as we increase bandwidth and use of electromagnetic fields, we're inundated with more and more, not just in the radio frequency range, but in all ranges, from the machines used at the airport of a very kind of signal generators. We're exposed more now than ever before. And what it manifests as, generally, for most people in the population, is stress. And stress and worry or fear as emotional states, but just stress generally, keeps you from reaching your higher states of consciousness. People ask me all the time, how do we guard against this stuff? Well,
yeah.
The first step, and it gets back to that question earlier, it gets back to the soul and the nature of who we are, is you got to get control of that. And you can. There's things you can do to learn how to gain control of that, because you cannot reach lower states of consciousness and awareness, the alpha range for where you really want to be in focus kind of situations, where you're at in the zone of learning, if you will, and athletics and all those things seem to appear in that range. Most people are so stressed out they can't even get there, you know, much less any other states of awareness. So fear, worry, stress, these are the big contributors. And the same things that are used for disrupting human thinking, like frequency following responses phenomena, you can actually slow and learn how, through other methods like biofeedback, how to control your own brain activity and optimize your human potential, rather than, you know, always kind of looking outside and saying, hey, what are people going to do to us?
Right.
We need to regulate that and create real serious penalties for people who abuse it, but at the same time advance technologies that we individually can choose to partake in or not, just like anything else out there in the world. A plane can drop bombs or deliver the mail. It's up to the operator and who's paying the bill, I suppose.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you've been looking into stimulating brain performance, different technologies for that for a long time, and that's, again, that's more of a positive flip side to all of this and what's possible. And in your view, then, is this something that you could counteract, the things that already goes on out there, and also possibly what might be in the pipeline, let's say? I mean, again, this has to do with frequency ranges, ultimately, of where we're being targeted. And actually, maybe for a moment, we can just talk about the brain overall. There, as you said before, there are different states, obviously, of brain activity or waves.
Right.
But what is the hertz range approximately?
Right.
Yeah.
The normal waking state, most of us are in a beta state or higher, which is approximately 12 pulses per second, 12 hertz. Think about it as pulses per second, and it's easy to keep track if you have any technical background. And dropping then from 12 to, say, 7 to 8, you're in this alpha range, which is kind of like the zone, the place you want to be when you're doing your intellectual work, you're studying, playing the piano if you're an artist. You know, if you can stay in this kind of range, it's pretty substantial in terms of your performance. Then dropping into the theta range, which is approximately 4 to 7, 8 hertz in that range, this is where you are in that lucid dreaming kind of state where you're sort of aware that you're there, but you're not there. Just before you wake up. It's where children between 3 and 5 or 6 find themselves. So they tend to be engaged in a lot of play and imagination and imaginary activity because they're kind of in that semi-lucid state. And so it kind of explains them too. I've had 5 and a few grandchildren now, so I get it. But below that state is the delta state, which is the deep meditative or deep sleep states. 1 to 4 hertz, and so external drivers, what's called through the phenomena of frequency following response, like pulsing light or binaural beat created with sound, can actually change the brain state. So you can't really drive. There's not much that can drive you to delta, but you can easily transit a number of the theta range states and the alpha range, and learn how to do it actually with other devices that give you feedback when you hit those specific brain states. So children, for instance, that are hyperactive can be taught, usually in 30 to 41 hour sessions, how to control their brain activity so they can actually slow it down into that ideal learning state so they don't need the psychoactive drugs, or vice versa, those that are running too much theta and just can't kick it up can actually learn how to do that so they can get there on their own. Problem with a lot of education systems, we start kids in academic learning, or try to, at 3 and 4 years old now, and really they're not structurally ready and haven't transited the normal cycles of theta in childhood at that age and what it dominates for those years. That's important time. So when you think about when do we start kids in that academic learning? But all this knowledge that we're gaining, we can actually enhance and control. We can learn to relax and actually push ourselves there if we want to. We can meditate better. We can learn better. I think this is the important thing. And when you start to alter, just think about how much comes at the average person, no matter where you are in the world, in terms of negative news that creates a sense of stress, worry, fear, anxiety, whether it's the economy or the murderer that's on the loose or whatever it is. This is probably the biggest, most effective mind control method at all, because it keeps people from thinking in their best state of thinking, so that we can be more active within our communities doing the things that we need to do, and more creative, quite frankly, in solving our problems.
Well, it's a good point. I mean, it's an obvious thing you point out, but it needs to be repeated many times, because again, when we talk about mind control, we think about some big machine, and some person is strapped on right in front of it and they're being beamed with some kind of frequency. But the fact is that mind control is just what you said. It's more obvious than that. It's more, and also hence more subtle in a way, because it's right in our faces and it's part of our everyday culture and we don't even really pay attention to it, which is kind of the scary bit of all of this. But if we, for a moment, go back to the frequency ranges and all that there, because the Soviet woodpecker radio signal was kind of right in the smack of middle of all this. The signal was observed using 3 repetition rates, about 10 hertz, 16 hertz, and 20 hertz. So
right.
What do you think that would, how would that influence people if they were in that?
Well, it's going to, when you start getting into those higher hertz range, you're going to become agitated and stressed. And the same was going on at the microwave beaming of the U.S. Embassy. It was pulsing that signal to create all kinds of psychological stressors and effects on the people within those facilities. The Russians actually developed a lot more knowledge in this area, and they also developed at the same time a lot more biological knowledge. So, for instance, radio frequency energy at the time of the fall of the former USSR was 1,000 times more stringent than here in the U.S. because they understood the biological effects, and they actually, I don't know whether they implemented their own regulations, but at least they had them on the books. And this is important to consider when you look back at the woodpecker signal. And for those who don't remember, this is a signal picked up by ham radio operators, and it was a clicking sound on a transmission, and that was related to the pulse rate. And what all of the research shows, it's based on the pulse rate, not a continuous signal, but this idea of spiking it. In a way that causes that spike pulsation is what causes the entrainment effect, whether it's light signals or electromagnetic signals, radio frequency signals. And this is where the basic understanding of the biology leads to higher and higher resolution over time, which we see in all of our fields, particularly this one.
So does this mean that we could have the same pulse rate, but it would be invisible, inaudible to us, but we still would be affected by it in the same way?
Yeah, I mean, it's in terms of whether using electromagnetic pulse, and you can replicate some of this with what they call electrocranial stimulation, which is essentially a little DC generated voltage that's run across points on the head where you get a conductor, and it just pulses that electromagnetic signal. Or you can use flickering light. You can get the same pulse rate out of flickering light, say 5 hertz or 6 hertz if you wanted to do that, or 20 hertz for that matter, by just pulsing that signal. And you'll perceive the light flicker, no doubt about it. But you can also then use binaural beat, where you also perceive the sound. But the way it's generated, because we can't hear these low frequencies in these ranges that affect us most profoundly, what they do is they put a signal in one ear at, say, 15,000 hertz, which is within the human range of human hearing of most people, and assuming normal hearing. And on the other ear, they put in 15,007 hertz. What happens is it causes cancellation effect of the 15,000, comes off the 15,007, leaves you 7 as a beat frequency. And actually, this achieved a patent back in the 70s, which also not only created that frequency, but also created what's called hemispheric balance, where both sides of the brain, the creative and the analytical, were both pulsing at exactly the same pulse rate, which in this application was designed for enhancing human performance by being able to use both halves of the brain. You know, we talk a lot about one being dominant over the other, but the real deal is if you can use them both simultaneously, you get the greatest possible effect. And so, again, on the enhancement side, what we learn at the same time people are spending a lot of money figuring out how to manipulate it, there's a whole lot of promise and possibility, and being able to sort of relearn what for some reason we either never knew or we've forgotten. But it's like exercising a muscle. We can work the mind in a way individually that enhances our possibilities and its performance. And that really should be our goal. And from that come better ideas, more creative solutions, and certainly a huge possibility in human potential.
I wanted to ask you about something, because I heard a while back that when we moved over to digital TV transmissions, the old VHF and UHF band have become pretty much available. And I heard some speculation that this could be used then to more actively, well, mind control, I guess, people on this band, since no one is using it anymore. Is there any truth to that, do you think?
Well, here's the thing to keep in mind. Any signal can be modulated across any carrier. So you don't have to reserve anything. You can do it with everything that's already out there. I don't know why they reserve it. You know, I mean, it's who knows? But the point is, it's again, sort of you're looking one direction while other things are going on. And I think that's the root of mind control, right? Get our, draw our attention off of things that are important. And really, it's any carrier. This is the essence of it. When you look at all the literature, no matter what you look at over the last 50 years, it all ends up in the same place. Any electromagnetic carrier can be, and I would suggest that that's the challenge, is to protect us from that eventuality, which is probably taking place now on lots of levels, and we can already see it. Television use by the flicker rate, something easily measured, unregulated. For political ads, think about it in close elections like what we see all over the world, where 1 or 2% are going to decide. You don't need to move the masses, and here's another way to consider that is, who's voting in the first place? Yeah. Most countries, half are registered, half of them show up, and half of them decide who wins. So you don't need to push very far to have a profound impact on what we see in the world today. And the use of this technology is already, at least in media, and anywhere where psychology is applied to advertising, which is everywhere, this is used. I mean, even gaming now. Think about gaming, the way they used to do it. You'd have these kids and different people try the gaming and then get the reactions. You like it, how'd you like it, what didn't you like, and then they'd refine the game and make it better and better. Now they measure your brain activity and take a look at it with three-dimensional MRI modeling, and actually know what brain centers are firing. So they want the brain centers that fire with addictions, the same ones that fire with addictions, the same one that fire with the release of certain endorphins that excite you, maybe the same centers associated with sex for that matter. And they can then create a game that is not only addictive and compelling, but it's going to sell millions and millions worldwide. That's already being done. So, I mean, and it's not a question of is it going to be done. It is in a lot of different ways, in product design, marketing, advertising. The first layer is right there. Think about the greatest breakthroughs in technology. Most of it surrounds communication, information, advertising, mass media. The things that 50 years ago people were predicting that would change your life to make it a 30-hour, 20-hour work week to achieve even more productivity. What happened to those things? You know, they don't exist, right? No, We're working harder for less all over the world, and other parts of the world are emerging. it's really kind of upside down, but technology is already being applied.
It sure has. Well, it's really upside down in that sense, and it's gone very far as well, as you point out, in this area. Even the U.S. military, I think a while back now, released, that's years ago, released their own, big multiplayer online game experience or whatever it was. And I bet you that they're gathering data and collecting a lot of interesting things from that as well to be able to predict where to go next when it comes to kids who are, first of all, playing these games, but maybe later on is out in the battlefield in some way or another. So they're doing it, that's for sure. Now, in a little bit here, we're going to take a break. Obviously, we need to get into HAARP a little bit because, again, we alluded to the woodpecker signal earlier, right. And we need to kind of get into where the HAARP technology kind of, you know, connects in with this, of course. But before we do that, we want to take a little break, and we want to mention your websites and stuff, but also your upcoming conference here in Holland, Nick, as well, the Global BEM Breakthrough Energy Movement conference. It's in November, and I'm going to pull it up here so I have the correct dates and everything else. But maybe you can just talk a little bit about what you'll be talking about there, by the way.
Well, it's really a look at new energy and energy alternatives, and the dimension I'll be discussing has a lot to do with some of the things we talked about today, and more on the HAARP issue, actually, and weather warfare, the manipulation of geophysical systems using electromagnetic waves. So, kind of driving that discussion around that, at the same time talking about a number of the other issues that we're facing, like the ones we just covered in this last segment. Energy has a lot of dimension. I think that's something new and something interesting to a lot of people.
Definitely. That's November 9th through 11th, by the way. And again, it's in Holland. So if you want to check that out, join our friend Jeroen over there in Holland, and there's a lot of great speakers there as well. We're going to have a link up, of course, to this. The website globalbem.com is where you can find that more. Tell us a little bit about earthpulse.com as well, Nick, and some of the things you have available for people there.
Well, that's my commercial site. It has all of our books and video material. Also has some of the technology we've been talking about on the positive side. There's a number of frequency drivers, and there's some biofeedback hardware, some simple stuff that people can use to enhance their performance and maybe be more productive in the things that we do that will truly alter the way this world works.
Indeed. Earthpulse.com, that's the website for that, and globalbem.com as well. All right, we'll take a short break here. Stay with us, Nick, and we'll be right back with more. In the second hour for our members, Nick describes two instances where the ethical issues have been raised surrounding mind-altering technologies. One of these is at the European Parliament, and the other in The Economist magazine, of all places. And later we discuss synthetic telepathy and how HARP technology connects with mind manipulation and geophysical manipulation. Stay with us for much more. You can sign up for a subscription at redeyesmembers.com and get full access to our archives. We have more coming up soon, so I hope you stay with us. If you want to hear Troy McLaughlin on the Saturn Death Cult, a continuation, and then George Kavassalas, Dean Clifford, Scott Onstott, Dan Tatman, and Kevin McMahon, Carol Sabik de la Haran, Randy Powell, and Richard Allen Miller, to name a few. More coming up now in the second hour with Nick Begich. We'll talk to you after the break.